Oh, thank you. This is the college students here. My birthday's tomorrow, so yeah. Thank you. Okay, now we got that out of the way. Oh, thank you, though. That was great. Hey, we're in 1 Samuel 22 today. If you want to make your way in the Pew Bibles, you'll find it on page 245. We're going to look at the whole chapter. This is a passage that I especially wanted to do when Paul Taylor and I were outlining the David story and choosing up passages. We each had maybe a handful and collection of favorites, and this is one of the ones that I really wanted to do, and Paul really wanted to do adultery, so I'm going to let Paul do that one. And so fortunately, I think it all worked out pretty well. We didn't have to arm wrestle each other over any passages, and so Psalm 22, or I should say 1 Samuel 22 is one of the ones that I wanted to do. In 2009, William Dershowitz, who is a former Yale professor, gave an address to the plebe class at West Point, and the address went viral. And I'd like to read for you a few of the excerpts from that address. Here's what Dershowitz says. It seems to me that Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and just so you don't think this is a generational thing, TV and radio and magazines and even newspapers too, are all ultimately just an elaborate excuse to run away from yourself, to avoid the difficult and troubling questions that being human throws in your way. Here's the other problem with Facebook and Twitter and even the New York Times. When you expose yourself to those things, especially in the constant way that people do now, older people as well as younger people, you are continuously bombarding yourself with a stream of other people's thoughts. You are marinating yourself in the conventional wisdom. You are creating a cacophony in which it is impossible to hear your own voice. What instead does Dershowitz recommend? Here's what he does for himself. I find for myself that my first thought is never my best thought. My first thought is always someone else's thought. It's always what I've heard about the subject, always the conventional wisdom. It's only by concentrating, sticking to the question, being patient, letting all the parts of my mind come into play, that I arrive at an original idea. By giving my brain a chance to make associations, draw connections, take me by surprise. In other words, he recommends getting alone with your thoughts. David, our hero, got to the point where he needed to get alone. He needed to get alone with his thoughts. But he not only got alone with his thoughts, he also got alone with his prayers. He got alone with his thoughts and his prayers, and he arrived at an original idea. Not only an original idea, but a priceless insight, an eternal insight. Do we need to do the same in the midst of our hectic and busy lives? Do we need also to get alone with our thoughts and our prayers? And if we do so, what might happen in our lives? Well, as we pick up the David story, there is no home for David. He's the anointed king, but he's the persecuted king, and he can't find a home in Israel because Saul is out to get him. He goes over to Gath of the Philistines, but he has to pretend as if he's a crazy man in order to escape there by the skin of his teeth. And so we ask ourselves, is there any place left for David? Are you ready today to enter the cave of Adullam along with David? 1 Samuel 22, verses 1 through 5. David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam, departed from Gath. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him, and he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. And David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. And he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me." And he left them with the king of Moab, And they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. That would be the cave. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. So David eventually finds his way to the cave of Adullam. And alone in the darkness of the cave, he buries himself in the Lord. And I want to know what happens in that cave. We don't get it in this narrative, but we do get it in a couple of the Psalms, one of which is Psalm 142. Look at Psalm 142, verse 5. David says this, "I cry to you, O Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living." That's what he finds in the cave. He finds the Lord. He says, "You are my refuge." He's been looking for refuge, right? He hasn't been able to find it anywhere. And he finds refuge in the cave. But in reality, he realizes the cave is not his refuge. In the cave, he discovers that the Lord himself is his refuge. The Lord himself is that safe place. And then he says, "You are my portion in the land of the living." The word portion was used in connection with the land of Israel. This was considered Israel's most valuable possession, the land that the Lord gave to Israel. And what is the case for David right now? He is landless. He's the anointed king, but he doesn't have any land. So what does he discover? He discovers that the Lord is his land. The Lord is his home. The Lord is his portion. The Lord is his most valuable possession in the land of the living. He has lost the land, but he has gained the Lord. What an exchange. And now his family makes their way to him. His family, from which he was formerly alienated, remember, now they somehow find their way to this cave. They look like they're refugees of the old kingdom, and they are seeking out David, and they find their way to David. And not only his family, but all sorts of refugees, 400 of them, beat a path to the cave of Adullam. And they are so attracted by what's going on there, the spiritual life that is emanating from that cave, that somehow they find their way to the cave. Saul, who was looking out for David, can't find him. He can't find the cave. But all these refugees somehow find the cave, and they find David in the cave. And we have 400 now who form the nucleus of the new kingdom. And David now has this small army to command. The same sort of thing is happening today, isn't it, in Syria? Back in Israel, you had a madman who was running things, and people were running from a madman who was destroying things. That's what's happening in Syria. Only it's not just one madman, it's a multitude of madmen who are destroying the country, and you have hundreds and thousands of refugees who are on the run, leaving the country and looking for a home, looking for some sort of refuge. Our missionaries, Nolan and Sandra Sharp in Croatia, are on the front lines in all of this. And Nolan recently said this, "Most of the Christian ministries we know in Europe are in action, and the churches as well. As you read of the crisis in Europe, know that believers, often without many resources, are working and praying to figure out how to respond as Jesus would." So David finds that the Lord is his refuge and his portion. Does he find out anything else in the cave? Look at Psalm 142, verse 7. David says this, he looks to the future. He envisions a new future, and he says, "The righteous will surround me, for you, the Lord, will deal bountifully with me." So he sees the future differently. In the darkness of the cave, it's interesting. He can't see anything, but he can see the future. And he can see that the future taking shape in a different way. Somehow he has this new and hopeful vision for the future. He recognizes that he can't keep his parents with him. He's got this army to run. And so he seeks refuge for his parents in Moab, probably because his grandmother Ruth came from Moab. And so that is successful. The king of Moab takes in his parents. So he's in the cave, and he's meeting with the Lord. Now he's got these people who have gathered to him in the cave. It was a huge cave, by the way. It could hold hundreds of people. But the prophet Gad comes to him and says, you've got to leave the cave now. The cave for David cannot become a permanent fortress. After all, David has discovered that the Lord is his refuge. The cave isn't his refuge. The Lord is his refuge. So even when he leaves the cave, the Lord is still going to be his refuge. The prophet tells him, it's time to leave the cave. The cave cannot become a fortress. The son of David was also on the run, was he not? He couldn't really stay in one place. And what does he say? Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And like David, the Son of David often withdrew to desolate places. And he buried himself in the Father, most notably in Gethsemane, when he separated himself from his disciples, fell to his knees, and buried himself in the Father. Have you ever felt like David? Have you ever felt like the son of David? Have you ever felt as if someone or something was out to get you? Have you ever felt like David, marginalized? Have you ever felt as if you didn't belong? Do you feel that way even now? And if you do, what do you need? Listen to Larry Crabb. I have come to the place in my life where I need to know God better or I won't make it. Life at times has a way of throwing me into such blinding confusion and severe pain that I lose all hope. Joy is gone. Nothing encourages me. Where are you going to go? One of the places you might consider going is a cave. Now, I don't mean a cave literally, although you might be able to find a cave someplace that suits your purposes. What I mean is getting alone in some place that's comfortable, away from the crowd, getting alone with your thoughts and your prayers, getting alone with the Lord. Bury yourself in the Lord. Go to the cave, so to speak, and bury yourself in the Lord. Now, oftentimes, this is easy to do if we really sense a deep need in our lives, if we are really hurting. We really have the sense that maybe I need to get alone with the Lord. The reality is, of course, is that we are always in need. We just don't know it. At certain points, however, we recognize that we are in need, and we might then be inclined to go to the cave. But this is something that we need to do on a regular basis. You need to go to the cave and you need to bury yourself in the Lord, but it's not something that can become a permanent fortress. You can't just withdraw from people and say, it's too difficult out there, I'm getting too beat up or whatever, I'm just gonna be all alone and comfortable and protected in my cozy little cave, never come out, never see anybody. And that's the way some people live because they've been so beat up in the world. No, you go to the cave and you find that the Lord is your refuge and your portion, and then you emerge from the cave, you see. So, how do you bury yourself in the Lord? First of all, start where you are. Start wherever you are in your relationship with the Lord and be honest with the Lord. Start where you are and be honest. Look at Psalm 142, verses 1 and 2. With my voice I cry out to the Lord. With my voice I plead for mercy to the Lord. I pour out my complaint before him. I tell my trouble before him. Notice that, first of all, David cries out to the Lord, as if the Lord were out there someplace. He doesn't feel that intimate or connected with the Lord. The Lord is out there, he's here, I cry out to the Lord. But as he does that, he starts where he is, he moves closer, and then he pours out his complaint before the Lord. Notice the spatial change. He has moved closer to the Lord. Now look at verses 3 and 4. When my spirit faints within me, you know my way. In the path where I walk, they have hidden a trap for me. Look to the right and see, there is none who takes notice of me. No refuge remains to me. No one cares for my soul. Look how he addresses the Lord now, very personally and intimately. You know my way. It's not the Lord anymore. It's not him anymore. It's you. You know my way. As he has started where he was, he's moved closer to the Lord, and now he's more intimate with the Lord. And he's honest with the Lord. He pours out his complaint before the Lord. He's very honest with this. He says, there's no refuge for me. He says, no one cares for my soul. It's one thing to have enemies. It's quite another to have no friends. And this is how David feels. And he is honest with the Lord. Only then, as he starts where he is, and as he is honest with the Lord, does he arrive at an original idea, a priceless insight, an eternal insight. What is that? The Lord is my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. If you start where you are with the Lord, if you are honest with him, if you move closer to him, you might begin to feel and to sense that he can be trusted. He can be trusted with everything, everything that is on your heart. Probably no one else can be trusted with every thought that you've ever had. But the Lord can be trusted. He is safe. He is a refuge. He is your refuge. But it's hard to really embrace that unless you start with where you are. And sometimes starting where you are means, I am with you here, Lord. I don't even want to be here. I don't even want to do this. I'm going to be completely honest about this. I don't even want to pray. But I'm here because I think I'm supposed to do it, so I'm going to do it. Are you going to meet me here or not? That might not be a bad way to start. And sometimes when we go to meet the Lord, it's because we have a sense of loss. We've lost something, or we've lost someone very important to us. We come to the Lord in a place of need. And what is it that we need? Well, what Israel thought they needed was the land. The land was the most valuable possession. You might understand then that whatever you've lost doesn't compare to what you find. That the Lord himself is your most valuable possession. You lose whatever, and you gain the Lord. That's priceless. That's eternal. What an exchange. And in the darkness of the cave, you might actually begin to see things a little more clearly. There's so much going on outside the cave. It's hard to make sense of it all. But when you withdraw from it all and you go into the cave, maybe things are going to make a little more sense. Maybe you're going to see things a little more clearly. Maybe there will be some sort of hope that rises within you. Perhaps you will see the future differently, as David did in Psalm 142. Go to the cave. What's going on outside the cave? Verse 6. Now Saul heard that David was discovered, and the men who were with him. Saul was sitting at Gibeah under the tamarisk tree on the height with his spear in his hand. And all his servants were standing about him. And Saul said to his servants who stood about him, hear now, people of Benjamin, that would be his own people, his own tribe, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you all commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds, that all of you have conspired against me? No one discloses to me when my son, that would be Jonathan, can't even use the names of these people, no one discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse, that would be David. None of you is sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me, not true, to lie in wait as at this day. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who stood by the servants of Saul, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him and gave him provisions and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Saul, imperious as ever, sits on the height. He's got his spear in his hand, the symbol for him of his power and his authority, and Gibeah actually means height, so what is Saul doing? He is sitting on the height of height, imperious as ever. And he is absolutely paranoid. He sees conspiracies everywhere where none exist. He feels sorry for himself. He throws a pity party. No one tells me anything. No one feels for me. No one's going to tell me anything except for Doeg the Edomite. Doeg is from Edom. He's a foreigner. More than anything, he is an opportunist. He is a political opportunist. And he informs on Ahimelech, the priest, who furnished David with supplies. But he withholds certain details in order to depict Ahimelech as being disloyal to Saul. Ahimelech is not disloyal to Saul, but that's Doeg's story. So, what does Ahimelech then have to say? Saul wants to know, or he sort of wants to know. Verse 11. Then the king sent to summon Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests who were at Nob, and all of them came to the king. And Saul said, "Hear now, son of Ahitub." And he answered, "Here I am, my lord." And Saul said to him, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, in that you have given him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him, so that he has risen against me to lie in wait as at this day?" Then Ahimelech answered the king, "And who among your servants is so faithful as David, who is the king's son-in-law and captain over your bodyguard and honored in your house? Is today the first time that I have inquired of God for him? No. Let not the king impute anything to his servant or to all the house of my father, for your servant has known nothing of all this, much or little." And the king said, "You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house." And the king said to the guard who stood about him, "Turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and they knew that he fled and did not disclose it to me." But the servants of the king would not put out their hand to strike the priests of the Lord. Then the king said to Doeg, "You turn and strike the priests." And Doeg the Edomite turned and struck down the priests. And he killed on that day 85 persons who wore the linen ephod. That would be the priests. And Nob, the city of priests, he put to the sword. Both man and woman, child and infant, ox, donkey, and sheep, he put to the sword. Ahimelech defends himself, more or less, but whatever he says, it doesn't really matter. There's no conspiracy to speak of because there isn't one. It doesn't matter what Ahimelech says. He is a dead man. Not only Ahimelech, but all the priests. However, the servants of Saul think he's taken things too far. They're not going to execute his plan to execute the priests. Doeg, however, has no such qualms. He is a foreigner. These aren't his priests. The Lord isn't his God. He carries out Saul's plan. Not only that, he goes berserk. He goes to Nob, the city of priests, and kills everything in sight. Well, that's the kingdom of Saul. How about the kingdom of this world today? Such stuff happens today in different parts of the world. But there are many people in this world who get beat up in one way or another. Beat up in the kingdom of the world. Beat up by people in the kingdom of the world. Beat up by the imperious who look down on everyone else. Beat up by the paranoid who think that everyone is out to get them. Beat up by the self-pitying who expect everyone to do their bidding. Beat up by the judgmental who are deaf to the truth. Beat up by political opportunists who cut down everyone in their path to power. Beat up by those who go berserk, who destroy other people indiscriminately. People who get beat up in the kingdom of this world need a place to go. They are refugees. We have refugees of the kingdom of this world even around here. Where are they going to go? Verse 20. But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. And David said to Abiathar, "I knew on the day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, 'I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me, do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life seeks your life. With me, you shall be in safe keeping.'" One priest escapes. Saul wants to kill them all, but one escapes. And where is that one going to go? Where all the refugees of Saul's kingdom go? He goes to David. What has happened for David? David has buried himself in the Lord. He has started where he was with the Lord. He is honest with the Lord. And being honest with the Lord, then, He's able to be honest with his failings and his faults and his sins. And he remarkably takes responsibility for this slaughter. He said, I knew that Doeg was going to squeal, and I didn't do anything about it. It's unclear exactly what he could have done, but he says, I didn't do anything about it. How different is David from Saul? Saul orders the massacre, and he orders the massacre of the priests of the Lord, for crying out loud, and he doesn't confess. He doesn't take responsibility for it, but David, who has maybe some small little part in this whole thing, he confesses. He takes responsibility for it. He's been honest with the Lord, and that allows him then to be honest with Abiathar. And Abiathar must sense, oh, David speaks truly when he says, with you, with me, you shall be in safekeeping. See, he finds safety in David because David is honest. He's forthcoming with all, and he's transparent with his difficulties and his struggles. The priest is safe with David. If you bury yourself in the Lord, starting where you are and being honest with the Lord, and if you find the Lord in some way in your cave time, watch then for who the Lord sends your way. See if he doesn't send your way a few refugees of this kingdom, of the kingdom of this world. Don't be surprised, however, if those he sends your way aren't exactly your first choice. Think of Eileen, who shared with us earlier. She had this nice, comfortable life for herself teaching high school in Sunnyvale. She didn't envision going to Africa. She didn't envision being surrounded by those people you saw on those slides. Yet, that's what happened for Eileen. And who are these people who came to David? Look again, 1 Samuel 22, verse 2. Everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul. Now, I wonder if at some point David buried himself deeper into the cave and said to the Lord, is this what you meant by the righteous? These people? These are the people you're sending my way, the bitter in soul? If you meet with the Lord and this spiritual life emanates from your life and the Lord sends people your way, expect for things to get messy. Expect to be inconvenienced by real people with real problems. Expect your life to get messy, but expect it to get very interesting also. And there may be people then who are attracted to you. Why? You've been honest with the Lord. You're able to be honest with them. And in a world where everyone is presenting a false front and no one is being honest and no one is being transparent, there is a hunger in people's souls to find some people, a few people, who are going to be honest with them because everyone is struggling. And if everyone pretends that they're not struggling, they feel really alienated and really left out. They feel as if they don't belong. And if you're being honest and transparent, they will feel that they can be safe with you, as Abiathar must have sensed regarding David, that he could be safe with David. Indeed, the righteous will surround you, even if they don't look so righteous. We had this wonderful time last night with Ed and Kathy Woodhall. It was a date night. Thank you to the Young Adults Fellowship. You watched our kids. We got to about 30 or 40 of us, or 30 or 40 couples or so, went on a date. But first, we listened to Ed and Kathy Woodhall. You know it's going to be great when they start speaking about their lives as a married couple. They've been married for 50 years. The topic was intimacy. You knew it was going to be good because they're going to give you the straight shot. They're going to be honest. And they were, and it was beautiful. It was a breath of fresh air. And afterwards, I told them, you know, God, I wish we had 2 hours with you just to hear your stories of how you struggled, but how the Lord has been there in the midst of the struggle. It was beautiful because they were honest. On December 2nd, 1995, I remember the date, I was not doing well. Relationship had just come to an end. I was a relatively new pastor. I still hadn't found my way. And I got in my car, I drove up to the Santa Cruz Mountains, and I went for a long walk on a creekside trail. At night, I ended up holed up in a coffee house in Campbell, I think it was. and I poured out my thoughts and my feelings to the Lord on this these pages of paper, page after page of paper. And I guess you could say I went to the cave, not a literal cave, but I went into the cave and I buried myself into the Lord, trying to be as honest with him as I could, starting where I was, feeling as I was feeling. And an interesting thing began to happen. I began to sense his presence in a new way. I was in the darkness, so to speak, but I felt a sense of light. I felt his love for me. And I began in the darkness to look out and see the future differently. I began to think about a new ministry. And thus, on that very day in 1995, almost 20 years ago, the Young Adults Fellowship was born. I couldn't have articulated it at the time, but a few days later, I started asking people if they would want to join me in this new venture. I ended up asking 12 people if they wanted to form the first ministry team for this. I thought I'd get maybe a handful of people at best. 12 people said yes. About half of them are still part of the church, which is really great. And thus, on that particular day, the Young Adults Fellowship was born, and a few months later, we started the ministry. And I shepherded the Young Adults Fellowship for 13 years, I think it was, until I handed it over to Paul Taylor in 2009. And today, we are going to commission two pastors, one of which being Paco Lopez to shepherd our high school ministry, the other of whom is Dan Westman, who is going to now shepherd our young adults ministry. He's going to be our third young adults pastor in the last 20 years. It's interesting that we're commissioning him on the same day that I'm connecting with this cave story in a way that causes me to recollect my own cave experience, out of which came great pain, but also the birth of a ministry. Bury yourself in the Lord. Bury yourself in the Lord, and then watch for the refugees that he sends your way. And as I stand before you today, and as I look out upon you, it's a little bit of a motley crew out there, I have to be honest, but I have to also say, the righteous have surrounded me, and indeed, the Lord has dealt bountifully with me. Amen.